Last summer, I spoke with a man who was on a governor's staff and often sat next to him at state events. And the man told me that every time the governor was given a piece of paper, it could be a budget, issues facing the state, whatever, he would really discreetly just write the word Jesus at the top of the paper. And he did this without fanfare. And if you weren't sitting next to him, you wouldn't know he did it. So why do you think he did this? I assume it was he wanted to keep his mind oriented to ultimate reality as he did his work. Budgets, public health, criminal justice, jobs, these are real and important issues. But the bottom of all that's real, what is the foundation? And he wrote Jesus for him to maintain perspective as he dealt with these pressing and important issues. Now, I think some people would find that fanatical. I thought it was just very practical. And the reason why is because everyone begins their thinking about everything somewhere. They begin with themselves as a reference point. They begin with some philosophy or set of ideas. They begin with their tummy ache or their headache or their fight with a spouse. They start thinking about what's in front of them from somewhere. And the governor was doing what everyone does. He was starting his thinking and acting somewhere, but he was going a step beyond what was normal. He was taking a step to ensure that his thinking originated in the right place. And the Bible begins in the beginning, the space-time beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God, of course, has no beginning, but space-time does. And this is important because without an understanding that all that exists originated from God, it's impossible to understand what follows in the scriptures. Because the beginning point for our thinking shapes the course of our lives. It turns into what we value, love, and what we do. It becomes a lens through which we see everything else. There's a man who made a living going from campus to campus debating Christians. He was a sort of professional un-evangelist. And he once said, it would be very strange, but if I was there in the first century and I watched Jesus Christ coming out of the tomb, coming back to life, walking around, it wouldn't imply that God existed. And you might say, well, that's irrational. And it's really not irrational. I mean, it's wrong, but it's not irrational because many people believe in multiverses, an infinite number of universes. It seems that there are particles that pop in and out of our realm of existence. There are apparently things with negative mass. There's a lot of weird stuff in our universe. And so for the person who begins with the universe rather than God, a man raising from the dead is not a stretch for them at all. Stranger things, he might say, have happened. So Jesus said in John 14:1, believe in God, believe also in me. There's an order of events there. This is the reason why I believe the enemy has gone after, in the beginning, God so strongly. Because if you undermine Genesis 1:1, you undermine all that follows. The history of Israel, the Exodus, the conquest of Canaan, the kings, the prophets, all this, if there is no in the beginning God, can be explained with natural causes. What happened in the life, death, resurrection of Jesus, what happened in the spread of the church, all explainable without God. And it's not because you have facts that undermine the facts of faith. It's because a different faith, a faith that God did not create, undermines a biblical faith, a faith that God did create. And perhaps you have been influenced by the weight of doubt regarding in the beginning. In the beginning, no, if no God was necessary, then in the right now, no God is necessary. You don't have to wonder if science has or can undermine faith. It cannot or it should not. Arthur Koestler, who he was a messed up individual, but he wrote a book called The Sleepwalkers, and he attempts to demonstrate that the belief in the unique rationality of science is irrational. And his point being in his book that scientists, like all human beings, are guided by passions, presuppositions, pride, insecurity, loves, hates, and of course, faith. Everybody lives by faith. A professor of the history of science once wrote that Darwinism was not the result of science, but it was a philosophical movement that took over in the late 19th century, and it's been a disaster for science ever since. Why? Because the facts are being forced to fit into a theory, and that's not science. The issue here is not merely theoretical. It's critical because it has implications for how you spend your life, and we'll see this in a minute. We'll start with in the beginning God, and it leads all the way to implications for how you think about and how you live your life. This year, our theme is closing the gap on faith and love, and we're looking at the year in a year of seasons, sub-themes. And this winter season, we're closing the gap on confidence in God, which is confidence is what faith means, confide. We're in Hebrews 11 and 12. So let me read Hebrews 11:3 to you. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. In the spring of 2000, a renowned Chinese paleontologist named J.Y. Chen gave a presentation at the University of Washington, and Chen is the world's expert on this important new discovery in southern China of these Cambrian-era fossils. And the Cambrian era is a period in the fossil record where numerous animal forms just arise suddenly out of nowhere. They call it the Cambrian explosion. And there's a great book, it's a long book, called Darwin's Doubt that deals with the Cambrian explosion and how it's been a problem for Darwin then, and it's a problem for modern-day scientists. But at any rate, during Chen's presentation, he highlighted the apparent contradiction between the Chinese fossil evidence and Darwinian orthodoxy. And one professor in the audience asked Chen, almost as a warning, "Aren't you nervous about expressing these doubts about Darwinianism so freely? Because China suppresses dissenting opinion." And Chen smiled and said, "In China, we can criticize Darwin, but not the government. In America, you can criticize the government, but not Darwin." And it would be really funny if it were not so very true, because many professors and scientists in America have been censored, some have been fired, for daring to even question current scientific theories about origins. I have a friend who I spent some time with 2 weeks ago who was a chaplain in South Korea last fall. And he showed me pictures he took of the border. And on the south, armed guards point their weapons north. On the north, armed guards point their weapons south and north. And they're ready to shoot anyone who tries to escape from the north to the south. Now, nobody on the south side is pointing their guns south because no one wants to escape to the north. And it says a lot about a country when you have to point guns in to keep citizens from leaving. It means you have a culture of repression and fear. In a similar way, our culture has its guns trained back into its own ideological country, ready to shoot anyone who would dare escape into another country, even if the facts take them there. In this case, a country where God has designed and rules over creation. Confidence in God can be undermined in any number of ways. Pastors and priests who do wicked things can undermine the confidence of people in God. Christians who live two-story lives. When people claim a set of beliefs that are different from the prevailing culture, and then they have the same values and behavior that are the same as the culture, it undermines people's confidence in God. And then when the weight of cultural pressures is heavily against a certain view of the world, and all dissenting views are mocked or suppressed, they're naive, they're not cool, they're not current, confidence in God may fail. And I say may fail because the prevention for all this is when people have a low experience, when they have a high experiential confidence in God. There's no amount of scientific evidence. You could line up the entire human population and they all tell me Christie doesn't exist, and I'm sorry, Christie exists. My wife exists. I have a high experiential relationship with her. And when people have a high experiential relationship with God, it's very difficult, if not impossible, for anything to undermine that confidence. So when people are taught a set of beliefs but not encouraged to test those beliefs in real life, it can lead to faith failure. The end game for all this in Satan is, for Satan is a loss of confidence in God. 2 Corinthians 4:4 says, "The god of this age," it's a little g, "the god of this age, Satan, has blinded the minds of unbelievers so they cannot see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who's the image of God." So Satan is the god of this age. Age is the current age we're in between the first and second advent of Christ. It doesn't mean that he's king. It means that people have crowned him king in their hearts. Satan was, Satan is about self-will. He has never prayed, "Thy kingdom come." He prays, he demands, "My kingdom come." His followers, not people who are overtly doing Satan worship, people who don't even believe he exists, are following him because they live in "my kingdom come" world. And he uses various means to cast doubt on the validity of God. But when we doubt God and his word, it's unlikely we're going to live a life consistent with God and what he said. So it's important that we continually close the gap in personal and experiential ways, not just merely intellectual ways, on where we are and where we could be in trusting God. Many years ago, some Mormon missionaries came to my house to convert me to their faith. And so I invited them in. And I said, "You're welcome in my house, but here I get to set the ground rules." The ground rules are, we're not going to debate ideas. We're not going to debate the facts. I'm going to share my experience, my personal experience, what Christ has done in my life, what he's doing in my life, and then you can do the same. So I did. I told him how God had changed my life, what Christ was doing in my life, and I said, your turn. One of them didn't have anything to say. One simply said, after some thought, he said, you know, one time a couple of years ago, I was outside by a lake, and I thought that God might be real. That's an extraordinary confession for a Mormon missionary to make in my house. His partner was shocked, looked at him and said, I can't believe you just told him that. And so I got their numbers, tried to follow up that week, and the organization moved them to another city. So we need to know the facts and have confidence in them, but we especially need to continually engage the facts in personal ways. The facts of God are about God. He's a person. And our relationship with him is factually true, but it's a relationship. And we should have a ready reply, a solid set of ideas to back up what we believe. But it's essential that we have lives that are actually moving towards relationship. 1 Peter 3:15 is frequently quoted kind of outside its context. It's always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. And so that turns into memorize some important data about your faith, which is good, but it's not all that verse is saying. The fuller verse is, it starts off, in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. That's where it starts. Then, be prepared to give an answer. Then, make sure you do this with gentleness and respect. Then, so that those who slander you can see your good behavior and be ashamed. So set apart Christ as Lord. Then have a ready answer, which involves knowing truth. But do this with gentleness and respect, or I would assume, don't do it at all. If you can't do it with gentleness and respect, then by all means, please be quiet. And then, verse 16, they should be able to see your life and see some validity there. So, don't misunderstand me. People do need to hear words. They need to hear the gospel articulated. But they need to see that a person who's living with confidence in God. God's not revealed to us, here are the 10,000 facts you need to know. He's revealed truth, facts, so we would know him. Jesus was speaking to some people who knew the facts of the faith, but were not interested in having a relationship with him. And he said, you diligently study the scriptures because you think that by them you possess eternal life. But these are the scriptures that testify about me. And you refuse to come to me to have life. So go back to Hebrews 11:3. This is a foundational verse for our faith. And if you pair it with Romans 1:20, where Paul wrote that since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal nature, divine power, have been clearly seen from what has been made. So Paul says some of God's qualities are seen from what he's made. This should be evident to all. The physical universe has God as its cause. Every event has a cause. So I prayed, I studied, I typed, then I spoke, and you heard that sentence, period. The point in which you heard that sentence was a finished series of causes. And behind that were a number of other causes, like my mom and dad got married and had me, and behind that were their moms and dads got married and had them. But if you go back far enough, there's not an infinite number of causes that led up to that sentence. Because if there's an infinite number of causes behind that sentence, you'd have never heard that sentence. We'd still be wading through infinite. So imagine yourself as a domino, and there's an infinite number of dominoes in line behind you, and you can't wait for your turn to fall. When will you fall? Well, you're not going to fall. You can't cross an infinite number of dominoes and ever get to you. You'll wait forever. The world we live in exists. It had a beginning. That beginning, that initial cause, was not caused. Or there'd be something behind it. In the beginning, God. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. There was no pre-existing stuff. God is first. He's eternal. There's no cause behind him. And we're so accustomed to cause and effect that it's impossible to get our minds around this. But something has always existed. That something or someone must be uncaused. Some believe the physical universe has always existed. Scripture teaches God has. In Exodus 3, when Moses asked God for his name, God said, I am. Meaning, I've always been, always will be. The physical universe rests on an uncreated first cause. Some believe that science has proven the universe came from nothing, that it caused itself. They say it's called the Big Bang. That's a terrible misunderstanding, common misunderstanding. Actual professional cosmetologists, not people who put makeup on people, but people who study the universe They don't believe the Big Bang is the origin of the universe. They don't believe everything came from nothing. They believe there was a highly compressed, different views of this, but a highly compressed point of matter and energy that exploded. They don't speak of nothing exploding. They have no idea how this happened. Lots of theories, no idea. We believe all that exists has eternal God for its cause or reason for existence. We believe this by faith, just as every other human believes what they believe about origins by faith, because no one was there. We all come to faith conclusions based on what we believe to be factually true. But actually, fortunately for us, someone was there. Jesus was there. He was the eyewitness. He was the causer of creation. So ultimately, we can base our conclusions about life's origin, meaning, and end on Jesus. Just like the governor wrote Jesus on every document to keep him focused on where his thinking and governing should originate, we too, in our thinking and governing of our lives, should make sure that it originates at the life, death, resurrection of Jesus. So follow with me on this line of reasoning, evidence. A man named Jesus was born in the first century, and his life, death, resurrection remarkably fit with predictions made about him hundreds of years before he was born. During his life, he was reported to do miraculous things, things for which we have good, solid evidence to believe they were true. During his life, he had a reputation for wisdom, grace, love, and overall good character. He was not crazy, and he was not a liar. He predicted his death and resurrection. He was killed as predicted, resurrected as predicted. Regarding his resurrection, there is solid historical evidence that it happened. All this points to Jesus being who he said he was, not a kook and not a liar, but a reliable source of truth. So then what did Jesus say about himself? I tell you the truth, he answered. Before Abraham was born, I am. Okay, wait a minute. This is the same thing God said about himself. And then when they heard this, they picked up stones to kill him. He's claiming preexistence. He's claiming oneness with God. He's claiming to be in the beginning. Furthermore, Jesus, God became man, this person who, unlike anybody else in human history, the singularity, testified to the validity of the Old Testament scriptures. He quoted them. He assumed their truth. He confirmed their truth. So there's a number of reasons we can confirm the factual nature of Hebrews 11:3 and Genesis 1:1, but a key reason is Jesus himself. You can ultimately trace your confidence in Scripture and the beginning to Jesus. Many people have had their faith in God undermined because they've been told that current science makes their faith untenable, unable to withstand scrutiny. This is just not true. And what it leads to for believers sometimes is they live with a sort of insecurity. They believe, but they're afraid that whenever what someone discovers comes in conflict with what God has said, then they have to be timid about what God has said. There are times when people have gotten the Bible wrong. But my point is about ultimate authority. Who has final authority in your life? You may or may not be aware of it, but evolution as a theory has been in constant evolution. It's currently in a state of crisis. There was evolution, there's Darwinism, neo-Darwinism, and now they're moving to neo-neo-Darwinism. Some leading evolutionary biologists, particularly those associated with a group of scientists called the Altenburg 16, these are not believers, are calling for a new theory of evolution because they doubt the creative power of mutation and natural selection mechanism. I mentioned last week the changing science on eggs. And science is great, but science can't do some of what people think it can. It can't tell you origins. It can't tell you what, how, why. It can't tell you why you're here. It can't tell you what happens when you die. It can't tell you what your real problem, what your real solution is. It can't tell your purpose. You have reason to have confidence in Jesus. There's no reason that someone could give that need undermine that confidence. There's no one like him in human history. And he said, this is true, this is real, the scriptures are true, the Old Testament, he quoted them, he lived them. So you can conclude that if he had confidence in the Old Testament, including Genesis 1, you can. This means that you live in your Father's world. It is his kingdom that you want to come on earth as it is in heaven. You want his kingdom to come, his will to be done in your life, in your heart, in your mind, as in heaven. And the implications for Hebrews 11:3 are enormous and practical. You have a king who has authority in your life. You have a king who's made you and everyone and everything else. You can take him at his words. So let's take in the beginning, God created the heavens and earth, and go all the way down to tomorrow or this week. Because that's true, you don't have to win. You don't have to have your way. In fact, you can give your life away and you'll find your life, Jesus said. You don't have to live with jealousy and envy and greed. These are empty things. Jesus said, your Father feeds the birds. He'll take care of you. You don't have to live in constant anxiety about the future. Jesus said, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? So because in the beginning God, you can tomorrow trust God with the next day and the next day and eternity. So by faith we understand that the universe was formed to God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. That sounds theoretical and philosophical and theological, but it's enormously practical. Because what follows from there, well, I guess you can trust him and take him at his word. In the beginning God, in the end God, in the middle God. Augustine said, you've made us for yourself and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Think about it. Since in the beginning God, what that means is that we were made by him for him. And the things that we pursue apart from him, they're destined to be empty. How can they not be? And so as we close the gap on where we are and where we could be in trusting him, we are moving further and further into reality, life as it really is. Let's pray together. Talk to God about your life, listen to him, and then we're going to spend some more time worshiping him together.